And we're back. It's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Hey, you can write to us, Taylor at CIUT.FM, and check us out, Taylor-Report.com. And I think we're on Facebook. And you can, I don't know much, but I hear we're on Facebook. We're going to be speaking shortly with Peter Rosenthal, but Phil Conlon, you have an announcement about the Science for Peace.
Science of the Labs, Science for Peace. That's tonight at 7 o'clock at University College, 115 King's College Circle, room 140. James Turk, Executive Director of the Canadian Association of University Teachers. And it's about the government's science policy, which is, you know, in a word, not to have any.
Yes.
I have a few other announcements as well. Fernando Gonzalez, one of the Cuban Five, is now safely home in Cuba.
Two out of five.
Are still imprisoned. International Women's Day, March 9th at 4 p.m. That's Sunday at the Casa Salvador Allende, 1482 Bathurst Street. And there'll be some women from Venezuela to talk about the situation in Venezuela. And it's free for women. It doesn't tell you how much the guys have to pay to get in. Yeah. Finally, at Betsatun on March the 5th, which is Wednesday night at 6:30, there will be a meeting about Venezuela and about the current destabilization campaign there.
Well, thank you very much, and congratulations, by the way, to all the people here in Toronto and around the world who worked so hard for the Cuban Five. They've done terrific things. We've had Keith Bolander and others here And it's wonderful that this has happened. We have three to go, and my understanding when we spoke to Ramsey Clark was that these next three are going to be tougher for various reasons. We will have people on to understand that, but it's been great work. And so we now have Peter Rosenthal here, and by the way, I think Lee Lorch in his last years was working on the Cuban Five, among other things.
Definitely was.
Peter, this is really sad news. But immediately it's turning into also a celebration of a terrific individual, Lee Lorch, who was a mathematician, but also someone who gave his life to the struggle for socialism and for equality for all people, and particularly he focused on the struggle against racism in the United States. And the New York Times wrote a great obituary. It's already out. We don't have yet an obituary in the Star or Globe that I know of.
Not that I'm aware of, but the New York Times is very good, and people can easily locate it by just Googling Lee Lorch, New York Times, and Google News. It focuses on his civil rights work, which was a very important part of his life, but not his whole life.
Yeah, it's the battle he waged there in New York, I had not realized until it was revisited by the people of that community. They wanted to know their own history, and they looked at it, and they found Lee Lorch. And the New York Times did a great profile of him a few years back. That's, I think, the occasion when you and I interviewed him on this show.
That's right. It was about the Stuyvesant Town incident, which was a notorious situation where there was the kind of segregation in New York City that you think of as being only in the South. There was a huge apartment building built by Metropolitan Life Insurance Company, and rented and prepared for veterans, returning veterans from the Second World War, unless they were black. They explicitly, openly, publicly said, no black veterans are allowed. It's really quite amazing.
Yeah, and not only is that amazing, very few people fought it until Lee Lorch and others in his committee. Was it the NAACP? What was that group that could you name it?
I think that it was mainly organized within the building. What happened was
like there tenants, were veteran, a tenants organization.
Tenants, yeah. It was hard to fight from outside, it seemed, but Lee was a returning veteran, and he got an apartment there, as did others. There were thousands of apartments in this huge complex, and a number of the people were progressive people like Lee, and they organized themselves, is my understanding, basically, and became a very powerful force in agitating and so on. And then Lee, because of his politics, not just anti-racist politics, but socialist politics, he was fired from his job in New York. What he did was he kept the apartment when he went to a job in Pennsylvania, and he rented it to a black couple.
It's what they call a subletter.
A sublease. Yeah. But that was totally, I don't even think subleases were allowed, but certainly not to black people. Mm-hmm. But they insisted on it, and it happened. That was part of the mix, part of what created a big stir. And then finally, the year or two later, the Metropolitan Life relented in the face of extraordinary political organizing.
But he also lost his job again.
Yeah, he kept on losing jobs. Lee lost many jobs. He was a victim of McCarthyism in every sense of the word, a triple, a quadruple victim. He,
including the sort of self-punishing kind of the NAACP, right? And the NAACP asked him to please go away.
Yeah, to please resign his membership because he was sullying the organization by his membership. That's what some organizations, the American Civil Liberties Union, was similar in various ways.
They red-baited themselves.
Yeah.
Actually, the peace organizations used to do that. They would expel people that were accused of being Reds or friendly to Reds.
Right. And they would say, it's not that we have anything against you. It's just we're worried about appearances. But the universities—
our racist friends would give us a hard time.
The universities that dealt with McCarthyism were unconscionably terrible in treating people like Lee and many other people.
Actually, I may as well, we have to drop a name here on it because it came up in the New York Times obituary, and that is Thurgood Marshall.
He doesn't come across so well in that obituary.
No, the quote from Lee Lorch, and it's, look, we're all equal before the law and God, right? He said Thurgood Marshall poisoned the water against him, poisoned the situation.
Yeah.
Wanted NAACP people to withdraw his membership.
Right.
And yet, what was he doing? I mean, he was actually leading a fight to integrate institutions which are public institutions.
Right. He did what we talked about in New York and Stuyvesant Town. But then he also was in Little Rock, Arkansas, teaching at a small black college at the time of desegregation there. And he and his wife played a very big role in that local, huge, important civil rights accomplishment. And there was a famous thing. Again, anybody who's listening can Google, if you Google Grace Lorch, his wife, and Little Rock, Arkansas, you'll undoubtedly come up with the story how there were some black students who were being escorted by National Guard into their high school, and one of the girls got separated from the group and was the victim of vicious taunting by the white jeering racist who was around. And there's a famous picture of one woman screaming at this poor girl. And Grace Lorch went up to the girl. She was there in a demonstration in support of the kids who were integrating the school. And she went up to the girl and she spirited her away. Mm. And apparently a driver of a segregated bus where you weren't allowed to sit in the front if you were black, nonetheless stopped for them in between stops, seeing the problem, and they got on the bus and got away.
Yeah, and Lee told that story, by the way. We have a tape. We have the record. Lee told us that story.
Right.
And you know, in the obituary, the notices and discussions, he emphasized it in interviews with the New York Times and others. He said, it's my wife and my daughter went through a lot.
Yeah. Well, I think he meant with all the firings that happened to him and all the moving around,
it was tough.
I mean, he had a daughter who was from age zero to whatever she grew up, and she was had to relocate all the time. It's not easy for teenagers to do and so on. And I think he was referring to that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Tell us also about, we may just remind people, Lee Lorch, outstanding mathematician, math professor, University of Toronto. York University.
After being blackballed in the United States, bouncing from one place to another, getting fired, and finally being totally blackballed in the late 50s, he came to the University of Alberta first, and then after I think a year there, he transferred to York University. And he retired at York University at the normal retirement age of 65, which he fought against, but unsuccessfully. But then he hung around for a long time afterward. He was 98 when he died. Yeah. You said at the outset it's a tragedy, but, I mean, on the other hand, we all know that nobody's immortal, yeah. And he did about as well as you could hope for.
But did you say he was 98?
98.
He was sharp as a tack.
He was sharp as a tack. Few months, he was tired a lot.
What do you know?
Yeah.
And other revelations.
So he slept much of the time, and sometimes
Well, you were talking to him. What kind of things were on his mind?
Well, his mind was the same when he was awake. Yeah, no, as you say, he was, until his last days, he was totally sharp, totally interested in politics and unrepenting. And he also liked to joke around a lot. And so on. At his 98th birthday, people asked him, what do you want for a birthday present? He says, another birthday. Which he, unfortunately, didn't quite get.
Yeah. Oh, he had, the New York Times asked him about if he could redo his life, well, what would he do? And he said, I would do more of it and better.
Well, he did quite a lot.
It'd be hard to improve, wouldn't it? I mean, Lee Lorch is, and he was very efficient in his politics, very good at it.
You know, and actually, what you just said reminded me of another thing he said. One time I said to him, gee, recently, you know, when he's quite old, I say, gee, Lee, you look like you always did. You haven't changed for all the years I've known you. He said, gee, I'm sorry, I haven't improved over all that time. No, he liked joking around. His
great,
jokes were amusing.
Great wit.
Another story like related in the sense that it's humorous occurs to me. There was a funeral of Anatole Rapoport a few years ago. You may recall Anatole Rapoport, another very interesting man, mm-hmm. who was a comrade of Lee's in the Second World War and so on. And Lee was at the funeral, and so were a couple of economics professors who are friends of mine. And I introduced them to each other. I said, Lee, this is Carolyn Pitchick, Martin Osborne. They're economics professors. He says, oh, that's very interesting. He says, I share a lot with economics professors. What's that? One of them asked him. He says, I don't know anything about economics.
Well, we'll be petitioned by the economists. he told me on that last interview, one of the last we did, he said that he had a cup with a quote from Einstein. That it was that the problem with one of the problems in the world was that the difference between intelligence and stupidity was that intelligence has limits.
Yeah. you mentioned in your introduction about him and Einstein.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you. Go ahead.
I don't know a lot about it, but Einstein was very concerned with McCarthyism and very generous with his time to victims of it. And I, in Lee's case, he knew about one of Lee's firings, he asked him if he wanted to get in touch with him. He spent an afternoon, I think, with him and wrote some letter of support, which, of course, Lee felt very good about. It didn't, on the other hand, undo the McCarthyist attacks on him.
You know, what I recall is talking about his visit with him, and he said he had gone there thinking that it was going to be very formal, or the would be brief, and of course he expected a kind of a, as we do with powerful people, a bunch of lieutenants.
Right.
And I think he said Einstein opened the door, and then I told him he was going to have tea, and made the tea, and two of them had cookies and tea. And didn't he take him for a walk or something? He decided he'd go for a walk.
And, I don't recall.
So he got plenty of time, but also. This was not trivial. He was giving him pretty profound advice. Einstein had very interesting theories about how to fight McCarthyism, which involved math, right? He said...
Well, maybe, but his mathematical physics was better than his McCarthy theories, apparently. Because the people that he helped still suffered.
A number of his friends, Einstein, including Thomas Mann, decided they had to flee America. People don't think about that. But they began to think about getting out because they knew what this could lead to.
Right. No, there definitely were a number of people who left the United States.
Yeah. We're talking to Peter Rosenthal. He is a math professor at the University of Toronto, but better known, I think, more broadly also for his legal work, and particularly in the area of anti-racism. And, of course, Peter, by the way, we want to remember another name here. Charles Roach was Peter worked very closely with Charles, and Lee Lorch was a kind of a visitor, a frequent visitor, as I remember from being in the office.
Yeah, actually, Charles Roach and Lee Lorch were very good friends, and they even traveled to the Soviet Union together once, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Well, if that doesn't get you in trouble, I don't know what will. matter with tell us about some of the activities Lee was involved in. I remember seeing him at a meeting, and a matter of fact, it was kind of sad for me. I saw him at a meeting discussing the Rosenberg trial and execution. And, of course, that subject has been revisited over and over now many, many times. And fortunately, the children of the Rosenberg sons have written books, and they came here on a couple occasions and to talk. And I saw Lee Lorch there, and he was at the front of the hall, and he stood up. But I was at the back, and I've reached a point where I couldn't hear what he was saying. So I asked him later, what was your point? And he said, I don't remember either. but he did. He was part of that campaign. I was just very happy. I just came and stumbled across Dylan Thomas, probably the greatest known poet of our age in the English language, and deservingly so. I saw a letter of his where he said, the murder of the Rosenbergs has to make any decent human being sick. I was very glad to see that. Lorch was part of the campaigns to try to save
him. Oh, yeah, certainly. Yeah, he was very active in all the major decent causes of the last 70 years. He was active in one way or another.
Yeah. Now, Lee was a member of the Communist Party.
He was.
And I think this would be it's important to revisit this subject when, in light of, for example, the attitude of Thomas Mann and Albert Einstein, of course, many others, but those particularly I recall Einstein and Mann saying, we don't have this issue the way you do in North America. You seem to have a kind of hysteria. Einstein never understood that. This idea that you had to have a witch hunt for people.
Right.
He said, if they have a political point of view, make up your mind whether you're yes or no. But the idea that you could hunt them and try to destroy them was really repellent. And when you think of what a wonderful figure Lee Lorch is, when people want to throw these words around and all the hatred that was being brought against the Communist Party, say, you're talking about Lee Lorch, right?
Right. And one thing that any true historian should admit is that the Communist Party played a huge role in building anti-racist struggles beginning in the 30s in the United States when there were very few others who were doing that, and continuing through the 40s and so on, and things like the Scottsboro Boys case.
Well,
and
all the
anti-lynching things. Yeah. Paul Robeson was, of course, involved with the Communist Party and anti-lynching activities and so on. So, and Lee Lorch's anti-racist work, which is so detailed in the New York Times appropriately, was definitely linked to his larger picture of what he wanted to see as an egalitarian world.
Yeah, it has to be acknowledged that the communism, of course, rejects national and racial and religious distinctions amongst people.
Right.
And the ruling parties of America, who can, you know, today, till this day, we have this kind of persecuting attitude of, was so-and-so Elia Kazan once one, or was this Zero Mostel? And you say, and you have to answer that, well, were you a member of the Democratic Party? Isn't that the party of segregation? And isn't that also the party of slavery? The Democratic Party was the party. I haven't seen them all down on their knees saying, oh, I'm sorry I was ever a Democrat.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, of course, there's been a huge victory of McCarthyism that's outlasted McCarthy. I mean, the communist ideology and communists have been irrevocably slandered. I mean, there obviously were bad things that happened in communist societies. There obviously were some wonderful things, like the kind of work that Lee Lorch did against racism.
Yes. And as you say, it flowed from an ideology.
Definitely.
And which he thought should be a shared one. We speak of our common humanity, and in the United Nations underlines this concept, those who championed it, and I think you refer clearly to the civil rights movement, that they started, of course, in the 30s, but in the 50s and 60s, it's frankly a fact that there were many communists who were willing to risk their lives and lost their lives. Going to get on those buses. People may not remember, but people boarded buses and crossed state lines in integrated buses and refused to get off or to observe the racial segregation, and they were beaten. It was not the Democratic Party. As a matter of fact, the Democratic Party didn't want them to do that.
Absolutely.
And in my memory, it wasn't the Republican Party either. There was only one party that was for that.
And people may not realize the role that the Communist Party USA played in early feminist activities when there weren't any non-communist feminists to speak of. There were a few suffragettes and so on, but the Communist Party was very active in pushing feminist things, and Lee was involved in that very much too, including with his wife. His wife was a school teacher in Boston, and they got married during the war. Lee was a veteran, and then he returned, and they were married, and his wife got fired then because the rule was women elementary school teachers in Boston could not be married. She got fired, and then she got rehired as a substitute teacher at a third the salary or half the salary. So they started a big fight about that, and they ultimately were able to change that a few years later as well. And Lee also was very concerned with the appalling lack of women in academia, and in particular in mathematics. And he was very helpful to a lot of women who were studying advanced mathematics to get PhDs and so on. He helped a lot of individual women, a lot of individual black mathematicians to become mathematicians against all the odds that they faced.
Yeah. We're speaking to Peter Rosenthal about his dear friend and our dear friend, Lee Lorch, who passed away. Was it Saturday, Friday?
I think it was Thursday or Friday.
Thursday. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know the date.
I forget. No.
Yeah. Now, Lee was served in World War II. Do you know anything about his experience? I read in the Times mentioned that he had witnessed a lot of racism aboard the ship. He went into the Pacific. He was with the Air Force. By the way, it had to be Army Air Force. There was no Air Force at the time. It was an Army.
Yeah.
The Army had an Air Force. The Navy had an Air Force. He went to the Pacific. My understanding is that aboard ship, black personnel were there to swab the decks and clean out the latrines, and had all the menial work was assigned to them.
I never talked to him about
his
war
know
experience.
About
I don't know anything directly from him.
You know, in terms of
there's a lot I wish I had talked to him about. I should have asked him.
Don't you always have that? You must have that feeling now, right? Why didn't I ask him this? Or
yeah,
that?
Why didn't I go visit him 2 weekends ago when I planned to?
Mm-hmm.
And I just got deferred by something else. I shouldn't have done that.
I hope all listeners will take note of this, that we have many valued personalities and who know so much and whose company will benefit us. If they don't observe that, they will regret. It is a very important thing to underline.
Right.
I mean, we had him on the air. We spoke, by the way, quite at length with him, but there's so many questions he could have clarified for us. He was a very honest man and a very witty one, as you say, and quite willing to take on any subject.
And very knowledgeable and interested in politics and close follower of politics for maybe 80 years or so. 20th century, he knew all about.
Yeah. Well, you want to share some how was he as a professor? Where do you often rank each other, I know, and have talent at different types of talents. What was his strength?
Well, his mathematical research was in real analysis, it would be called, in differential equations, and that's not very close to my area of research, so I don't have direct knowledge of that. You know, mathematics is an esoteric subject, even in a sense to some mathematicians, in the sense that people in different fields don't necessarily know a lot about the work of people in other fields. And he certainly was at least a well-respected researcher, in spite of all the pressures on him from other things.
Mm-hmm.
And by all accounts, he was an excellent teacher. I do know a couple very good mathematicians who credited him with inspiring them and teaching them how to be mathematicians.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know that he inspired a lot of black mathematicians and women mathematicians as well. So he certainly was a very inspiring professor of mathematics and a very competent researcher in mathematics.
Mm-hmm. By the way, this program is going to be on tonight. The Science for Peace people, they made the there was a video, and I never know what word to use anymore. I would, in the old days, I would have said it was a movie.
Yes.
a documentary was done on Lee, which is quite touching to watch. That brings up something. He was an admirer of Joe Louis. Joe Louis meant a lot to him. Knocking out Max Schmeling was a major psychological moment for Lee Lorge.
Yeah, as far as that video, by the way, again, if people Google around on YouTube, I think you'll be able to find it. It's an interview with Lee as an older man, maybe a year ago or so, or a little bit more. And he talks a little slower than he used to. He never talked very quickly, actually. But what he says is very sensible, as it always was.
Yeah, that should be. I hope that now there may be an. I assume we're going to see some public programs to remember Lee, and that film should be a part of of any gathering.
You mentioned that Jim Turk from the Canadian Association of University Teachers is giving a talk at 7 o'clock tonight. I'm going to go to that. I hope maybe you'll join me. But. But CAUT, that organization, gave Lee a very high honor about a year ago, mm-hmm. a Distinguished Service Award, a Lifetime Service Award or something, and they held the ceremony in the home that he was in, and it was very touching, and Lee spoke, as he always would. He really got energized for it and gave a very good talk. It was both funny and educational.
Yeah. Well, that describes his life. I love that line of his. All I would do is do more of it, and I would do it better. Peter Rosenthal, it's been a pleasure talking to you about such a great man as Lee Lorch, whose emblematic life. And if you study his life, you would learn about 20th century and where we're going now, and probably there's some big footsteps there. All you have to do is follow them. This is Phil Taylor for the Taylor Report. You can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. I want to thank Phil Condon and Peter Rosenthal, of course, and Andy for the work, and we'll see you next week.